Hey, my little rosebuds, welcome back to another episode. It is my wedding anniversary today, and I had a really good day. So we're gonna do a new episode. This episode, unfortunately, focuses on a 13-month-old baby, or a year and 1 month if you can't do the math, that her parents believed she was possessed and performed an exorcism on her, and it had terrible consequences for the child. So we will dive into the story of Amora Bain Carson. So grab all your tools you need necessary to listen to this podcast, aka some Elky if you want, some weed if you want, or just be sober, vibing, listening to the podcast. Although I'm sure it's much better if you are on one of the substances I listed just now. So grab that all and let's get into this story. Hey, my little rosebuds. I am so excited. Welcome to another episode. Before we get into the true crime tale, let's go over our strain of the day. It is called the Golden Nugget. I personally love this weed. It is that stanky danky. You know what I'm talking about if you smoke weed. It smells good. It tastes good. It's potent. It is delicious. The strain is called the Golden Nugget, and I've been smoking it out of bongs, just so everybody's aware. I'm trying to cut back on the concentrate and get back into flower, so I won't have concentrate probably for a little bit, but that's okay. So I give the Golden Nugget a 7 out of 10 leaves. It's delicious, makes me sleepy, which is good because I only smoke bongs at night. Because I get sleepy, I am one of those people where indica couch really does resonate with me. Like, it's not just a saying. So yeah, so this weed makes me nice and sleepy, which is good though because I have sleep issues. And it's great. So like I said, 7 out of 10 leaves. I really like it. I recommend it. If you can get it from your local dispensary, or if you trust your dealer actually has the strains he says he has, because I know people on the street be saying they have stuff that they definitely do not have. So, but I do recommend it if you can get your hands on it. Tonight, since it was my anniversary, I am being a fancy pants. We were out earlier, and I'm continuing with a third espresso martini. Luckily, guys, I got my tolerance from my mom, who could drink any guy I know under the table, so I'm good. I had a DD. My husband doesn't really drink, and we are all good. So grab your bowl, bong, joint, blunt. I go over this every time, but it never gets old to me. And I always try and think of new things to say. So how about a steamroller? How about a gravity bong? I'm trying to think of things I smoked when I was younger. Grab your pipe. Grab your bubbler. Grab whatever you need. Grab your grinder. All of that. Grab your cocktail. So grab your weed, grab your wine, and let's dive in to this true crime. Okay, so let me start this episode by setting the scene. Episodes where children die are especially hard for me. I don't think anybody deserves a brutal death, but a baby, definitely not. There's a lot of issues in America that I think come to the forefront through this true crime case. And definitely one of them is accessibility and knowledge about mental health issues in America. It's unfortunately still stigmatized by a lot of people, even though almost everybody has somebody in their family that has some sort of depression, anxiety, addiction issues, whatever it is, most people experience it, but not all. And really religious sects may not believe in medicine, so for these kinds of things, so just keep that in mind. But I do want you to keep in mind the stigmas that go along with mental health care in the United States and how that may have affected this case. And I'm not just saying that as somebody pursuing their master's in clinical mental health counseling, I promise, or maybe I am, whatever. Okay, so let's get into it. So in January of 2008, which I graduated in 2008, woohoo, class of 2008, I'm pointing out how old we are, but shout out to you guys. Okay, so in January of 2008, an 18-year-old Jessica Carson is attending high school, and she meets Blaine Millam, also 18. And because they're 18 and they think they know everything, but they really don't, they become engaged extremely quick. So Jessica, which her name spelling J-E-S-S-E-C-A, I have never seen. I have only seen an I, so it might not be pronounced Jessica. So I'm sorry if it's not, if it's like Jessica or something. You never know these days, but I'm reading it as Jessica. So she already has a 13-month-old baby named Maura Bain Carson. And so the two of them end up moving in with Blaine because he has his own apartment in Longview, Texas. And if you ask any of the friends, everybody says that Blaine absolutely loved Amora. Now, as the story goes on, that's obviously going to change. And we got to come up with a nickname for Blaine. I haven't thought of it. I like to think of them on the spot because I feel like you guys enjoy those the most. So let me think about it while I'm telling you the story, and I promise a nickname for him will be coming. In the spring of 2008, Blaine and Jessica go out and buy a Ouija board. Now listen, I live somewhere where I discovered we had a Ouija board, and with two of my roommates, we were like using it, and one of the other people who lived there came home, and she was super religious, and she freaked the fuck out and said we were inviting bad spirits into the house. The house was old AF. Abraham Lincoln actually spoke there, and it was a part of the Underground Railroad, so it was really old, so we thought a Ouija board would be cool. No, she took the, it begins with a P, and I can't remember the word, but you know, the thing where you search out the letters with it, where, you know, all the people have their fingers on it. She took that and freaked out and said we were welcoming evil spirits into the house. So that was my last experience with a Ouija board. Anyway, Blaine, and Carson get a Ouija board while they're living in their Longview, Texas apartment. And Jessica sadly wants to communicate with her father. He died from a suicide when she was just a young 10 years old. And unfortunately, she was the one who went on to discover his body. So that obviously will mess somebody up really bad at 10 years old, finding their dad dead of an apparent suicide. Like, that would mess anybody up. I'm not trying to excuse what she did, but maybe that's why she chose the partner she did. So she thought that she could get answers from her father that she needed about only things that he would know, stuff about her mom, stuff about her family. So they start using the Ouija board to try and communicate with him. So they spend 2 hours trying to communicate with Jessica's father. And this is when things go wrong. So Bloody Blaine. No, I don't like that one. Sorry, still workshopping. I take that one back. Lame Blaine. That is a good one. Okay, that's the keeper, guys. So Lame Blaine, after they spend 2 hours trying to communicate with Jessica's dad on the Ouija board, becomes convinced that Jessica Wait, I said that backwards. I'm sorry, guys. So Jessica becomes convinced that Lame Blaine is possessed by the devil. Not only does Jessica believe that Lame Blaine is possessed by the devil, but she also says his entire apartment is possessed because he lived there, so it got possessed as well. For some reason, Lame Blaine's mom takes this as a reasonable reason to move into her house in Tatum, Texas. And it's a very small town located in Russ County. It has a population of 1,385. I graduated in a town that has a population of just over 2,000. I cannot imagine living in a town with significantly less people. That is crazy. So they move back in with her in the middle of effing nowhere. I mean, in Texas, because Texas is so huge, that has to be literally the middle of nowhere, like where Wrong Turn would take place or something. So they move in with her because Jessica, cray cray Jesse, is convinced their apartment. Sorry, it's not funny. I just think it's funny to think that the devil would possess an inanimate object like a house rather than a person, but I digress. Because she's convinced, cray cray Jesse is convinced that the apartment is haunted along with her significant other. So these two are in Tatum, Texas now instead of Longview, living with the mom. And it's a tiny little town, so everybody knows everybody's business. So Lame Blaine and Cray Cray Jesse, I'm going to mess up Lame Blaine, say, before the end of this episode. That's one of the more tongue-twisty ones I've came up with. So in this apartment, the landlord finally goes in there and says, after the two leave, and says that it was completely trashed. Food was left in the fridge to go bad. She found a light bulb full of amphetamines, which, like, I am sorry, don't meth around. Like, I have done my fair share of drugs. Don't do heroin. It's crazy addictive. Don't do crack. It will make you paranoid. I have never, ever, ever touched meth nor associated with people who regularly do, because they are insane when they're on it. So amphetamines plus Ouija board equals bad fucking idea. Like, how bad of an idea could you possibly come up with? Let me use this thing that could possibly contact the dead while I'm all fucked up and paranoid. Like, no. Stay away. Don't meth around. And that is all I have to say on that matter. Okay, so the light bulb full of amphetamines. And that, kids, is why you just say no. I'm kidding. Just say no was bullshit, but I digress. So she also finds a knife in the toilet tank. And I find this so funny because what are you going to be like pooping and hear an intruder and be like, oh, good thing I have my toilet knife handy. Like, what the hell? And then if you don't kill the person, they're definitely getting an infection. Like, there is no doubt they are getting a gnarly, gross infection. And since these two are all fucked up on drugs, that toilet is probably freaking disgusting. Blech. I don't even want to think about it. Okay, so they left the place a mess because they were doing meth. Blah, blah. That's not shocking to anybody. So people who knew Cray Cray Jesse when she was still just Jessica and not a Cray Cray said that they noticed complete changes in her behavior at this point. They said she was once outgoing and now she was introverted, didn't really talk to anybody. She stopped caring about her appearance. She didn't shower. She wasn't brushing her teeth or her hair on the regular basis. No makeup. I don't know because it doesn't say, but I'm going to assume she probably had some sort of pick marks or teeth issues or whatever because meth is famous with that. Another reason to not meth around. I promise I am not sponsored by the Anti-Meth Coalition. I just think that shit is insane. Like, it has, like, battery acid in it. Like, most of your meth cookers are not going to be Walter White with a high freaking intelligence towards chemistry. Most are going to be like the guy from Spun, which is a great movie, Mickey Rooney, and blow themselves up. Sorry if you haven't seen it, but it's been out for, I don't know, 15 years. Brittany Murphy is in it, so it's been out for a while. Very good movie. But that is so, like, you're trusting rednecks to chemically develop a drug for you. It's just frightening to me. I don't know. I know fentanyl is terrible too, but there's just so much shit in there and people have the weirdest, like, paranoias because they're not sleeping. I don't know. It just doesn't sound fun to me. Okay, so let's move on from the toilet knife. So friends and relatives described Cray Cray Jesse's behavior changing drastically, and they were worried about her and Amora. Why, when people noticed this, they didn't step in for the daughter? I'm not really sure. So that kind of upsets me because it wasn't just about Cray Cray Pants. It was about her daughter, too. And the mom, Lane Blaine's mom, was close, and Lane Blaine's dad and him had a great relationship. So even if Cray Cray Jesse had parents that weren't involved, why aren't these two getting involved and being like, this is not a safe environment for this child? So actually, Lane Blaine's father died later that year from a stroke. And like I said, they were extremely close. He had homeschooled him from the fourth grade on. They would watch cartoons together. And he is the Lane Blaine is the one that told his father that he wanted to be a rock star. He only shared that with him. He would play videos of him on the drums. So Lane Blaine has been described in two ways. Passive by some people, and other people say he's controlling and has a short fuse. Now, I was in an abusive relationship, and he was very controlling, and to the point where it was emotionally abusive, or it would be. He had a very short fuse, but most people would say he was chill because he was putting on that front. So I have no doubt that he was like Two-Face and had these two different personalities that he would express, because I have been there with a guy. So a friend of Cray Cray, Jesse, said she witnessed an argument between the two, and Lane Blaine pulled out a gun, threatened suicide, and tried to leave in Cray Cray Jesse's car. So Cray Cray gets in the car with him, and he shoots a hole into the floorboard. And right before he meets Cray Cray Jesse, Lane Blaine is charged with aggravated sexual assault on an 11-year-old girl. A few sources said 13, but others say it was more than one victim. So from the hearsay, I can't definitely say for either. But yeah, this guy, gross. And if you're a mother and you trust your daughter, even if she's only 13 months, she eventually will be older, and you're engaged to this dude and you trust him around your kid, shame on you. And if I'm offending you because you have chosen a predator over your child, good. I don't want you listening to my show anyway. So these two brainiacs continue to believe that lame-ass Blaine was possessed, and so was Amora. The two of them felt that the only way to get rid of Amora's demon was to perform an exorcism. So Cray Cray Jesse and Lame Blaine think that they have the religious knowledge to perform an exorcism. So on December 2nd, 2008, while still believing that Cray Cray Jesse's daughter was possessed, Cray Cray Jesse and Lane Blaine do a bunch of amphetamines and then pick up a hammer and use it to beat the demon out of her, out of Amora. Now, I don't know if you guys have ever seen any exorcism movies or anything, and I realize these two are on drugs, but never once in my life have I seen an exorcism be performed by literally beating somebody or beating the demon out. Like, what? What? They didn't, like, they couldn't even YouTube it before deciding what to do. Like, who was like, oh, a hammer is the best way. This poor, poor, poor baby. Sometime afterwards, the scene was staged to look like it had been done by somebody else, and they put fake blood throughout their home. Then Lane Blaine and Cray Cray Jesse drive to a pawn shop, and sold tools for money in order to get some money so they could pay somebody to provide the exorcism. This clearly doesn't work out, and they end up doing a hammer exorcism themselves. What the hell? Like, Cray Cray Jesse, I realize she's on drugs, I realize she's crazy, she's a crazy boyfriend, but like, that is your baby. How do you just do that? So they end up going to breakfast, and they decide to buy some cigarettes at a gas station, and that's what they spend the cash they do get on instead of the exorcism. And Amora was left at the residence to die in a hole in the floor of the bathroom. At 10:37 a.m., Lane Blaine finally decides to call 911. The officers arrive, and Cray Cray Jesse and Lane Blaine tell them that they went for a walk to look at a property and they were planning on moving. They were gone for an hour to an hour and a half, and when they returned, they found Amora in the hall, injured but alive. Lane Blaine would later change this and say that Amora was dead when they arrived. So she was either injured or dead, according to Lane Blaine, when they left and came back. Why it would... I don't understand this excuse. Why would it be okay to leave a baby home alone for an hour to an hour and a half? Like, what? These people are insane. This girl should have never reproduced, and I feel terrible for Amora. That's all I gotta say. Lane Blaine goes on to add that Amora had a blood ring around her mouth and looked like she had been eating insulation. I'm sorry, it's not funny, but like, what the fuck? Why? So they left the baby alone for an hour to an hour and a half in a house where she could readily just eat insulation. Oh my God, these two. Good Lord. They have less brains combined together than most people have on their own. These two were destined to be together. It's couples like these that make me believe in destiny, because like everybody else would have been like, what the fuck is wrong with you, to either one. They looked like grieving parents and were holding each other as they spoke to the officers. Lane Blaine then tells officers that they were welcome to search the home and gave them names of people that could have possibly done this. So, in order to follow everything, to make sure they can use everything in court, the investigators wait for search warrants, and they obtain them and start searching the property. They find blood spatter, bloody bedding, baby clothes, diapers, wipes, a tube of Astro Glide lubricant. Sorry. But yes, hopefully they were only doing anal, so they didn't maybe reproduce again. Oh boy. I'm sorry, Mom, if you're listening. A pair of jeans with blood stains on the lap. All the items were tested and they were positive for Amora's DNA. Lane Blaine's aunt also called to report a conversation Lane Blaine had with his sister. So he tells his sister they found a way to get back home to get some evidence that was underneath it. The officers crawled under the house after hearing this. So he says, go back to the house. There's evidence underneath it. It was a mobile home, so it was easy to crawl under. They discovered a pipe wrench and a plastic bag, and it had been shoved into the hole in the bathroom floor. Analysis would later reveal remnants of Astroglide lubricant on the pipe wrench, Amora's diaper, as well as the wipes that were collected earlier from the home. One finding, an investigator found that there was a note, and when processing the couple's vehicle, they had no car seat, so Amora was just riding free. They found one face down in the driveway. Both Lane Blaine and Cray Cray Jesse are indicted on capital murder, and they plead not guilty. The trial for Lane Blaine began on May 3rd, 2010. They had to change venues because this was a highly publicized case. There's satanic panic always in America, and we just love to latch on to stories where people are involved in satanistic cults or ritual killings. These always find their way into the news. The medical examiner named Amora's cause of death as homicidal violence due to blunt force trauma and possible strangulation. Here, okay, so if you do not want to hear this list of injuries because it is heartbreaking, fast forward a couple seconds. I totally get it. I didn't want to read it, but Amora's story, she deserves for it to be heard and for everybody to know how important mental health is, especially in parents. So her injuries included facial abrasions and bruises, and it was so bad it just looked like one giant injury, 24 human bite marks, bruises, scrapes, and abrasions from head to toe, bleeding underneath her scalp, extensive fracturing to the back of the skull, a laceration to the brain, as well as swelling, bleeding around the optic nerves, bleeding in the eyes, and around the jugular vein, spinal fractures to the right arm and leg consistent with twisting. Spinal fractures. You can't do a spinal fracture to an arm. Spiral fractures. 18 rib fractures, a tear to the liver, and extensive injuries to the genitalia. The underside of her tongue was lacerated from blunt force trauma. The medical examiner went on to say these were the worst injuries he has ever seen in his whole career. He couldn't name which injury caused her death because there were so many that were possibly the cause of death. And although we know teeth bite mark evidence is not 100%, it was concluded that Blaine is the one that made the majority of them. And Cray Cray Jesse only made one. A nurse from the county jail where Lame Blaine was being held testified that he had called to her one day, and when she arrived at his cell, he was crying. And he handed her a note that said he wanted to confess and that his dad always taught him to be a man, and he had been reading the Bible and he wanted to confess. And that he still loved Jessica, Cray Cray Jesse, which these two should stay away from each other. You know what I'm saying? Like, gross. The defense case focused on Cray Cray Jesse as the murderer for Lame Blaine, which happens often, where they try and turn it all on one thing. When they noticed the change in behavior, she had received a settlement from her father's estate, and she had become bizarre and paranoid, and they were all concerned about Amora. Well, nobody did anything, and she was clearly on amphetamines, so that's probably why she was bizarre and paranoid. A psychiatrist was called by the defense and stated that Cray Cray Jesse's condition at the time of Amora's death was consistent with psychotic depression. Also, amphetamines can cause psychosis because you're up so long, so I don't want to write those off. His assessment was made with reading about Cray Cray Jesse, and he had never actually met her. The jury for Blaine deliberated for 8 hours and came back with a guilty verdict. So when the judge was coming up with his sentence, it was brought up and brought to the attention of to the judge that Lame Blaine was also on probation for aggravated assault of a child under the age of 14. And he was in violation just being near Amora. A conversation between Blaine and an officer where he admitted to several other assaults he had committed on children happened. And a fellow inmate testified that Lame Blaine said he planned to escape from jail and threatened to stab him with a pencil if he told anybody. Various other witnesses testified to seeing him controlling Cray Cray Jesse, as we brought up earlier, and that's not surprising. Lame Blaine's mom, Shirley, testified that her son suffered from emotional immaturity and of his use of meth contributing to all of his various issues. That is, yes, that's probably accurate, Mom. Good Lord, Shirley. A toxicologist testified that Lane Blaine had 10 times the therapeutic dose of meth. I don't know what a therapeutic dose of meth would be. I think this person who I got my information from meant that a therapeutic dose of amphetamines, not meth, but 10 times what is normal at the time of the crime. And this amount, as I said, can cause severe psychosis. Another expert testified that Lane Blaine's mental deficiency, his emotional immaturity, and meth use were all contributing factors. And it was brought up that Lane Blaine had not been read his Miranda rights, which if you think that affects anything, that's a huge joke. It will just make it so they can't use anything you say in court against you, pretty much, but they're not going to drop the charges due to that. The defense claimed that Cray Cray Jesse was controlled by Lane Blaine. Wait, let me rewind. Okay, so in the end, Lane Blaine gets the death penalty. So he deserves it. Go die. I'm not sorry about that. I think people who hurt anyone are scum, but people who hurt children, scum of the earth. Go die. Bye-bye, Lane Blaine. Won't miss ya. So Cray Cray Jesse's trial begins April 8th, 2011, and the prosecutors say that she sacrificed her child to a monster. They didn't seek the death penalty with her, but argued that she was far more than just an innocent bystander who was controlled by Carson, basically, Lane Blaine. The police had been called to their home on several occasions over allegations of domestic violence, so this came up in Cray Cray Jesse's defense to say she had battered woman syndrome and she was being controlled. The defense claimed that Cray Cray Jesse was controlled by Lane Blaine and that she believed that Amora was possessed and looked to Lane Blaine for a solution, and he came up with the exorcism and carried it out. Okay, cool. You asked a child freaking predator. Not that priests aren't that, but a child freaking predator who has assaulted many people on what you should do with your daughter because you don't think she's acting right. Good Lord, Gigi. I can't even with these people. I can't. It's mind-blowing to me. The prosecution closed by asking the jury why, if she had really thought the baby had demons in her, then why did she not attempt to take her to a church or a doctor? Thank you. That was my point this whole time. Who's just like, oh, she's possessed. Let me have my 18-year-old boyfriend tell me what to do because he would know. He has medical training and or religious training. Like, what the fuck? As I said, I'm not saying priests are better, but a lot of priests aren't predators. And this kid clearly was. If you think there's a demon in your child, you take her to the doctor, but you don't rely on your fourth grade educated meth head sex offender boyfriend to take care of it. Quote, unquote, that was the defense's closing argument. The jury found Cray Cray Jesse guilty, and she was sentenced to life without parole. Since these convictions, Lane Blaine has stayed his execution twice, citing mental competency and bite mark evidence, which I said before, that is not conclusive as evidence at all. He remains on death row, and no new date has been set for his execution. His mother, Shirley, maintains he is innocent. Pfft. Yeah, okay. Your son is a pedophile predator who beats women and children. Like, get out of here, lady. I understand you want to defend your kid, but get out of here. Some sources say that Lane Blaine got married while in prison, but it appears now that the two have left each other. That brings us to the end of this true crime tale. A very sad one for sure. Poor Amora, she didn't even get a chance to experience her life before it was violently taken from her because her mother and her, not stepdad, her mom's boyfriend, who was insane and a child predator, decided she was possessed and needed to get beaten in order to get the demons out of her. All right, so I hope you enjoyed this episode. Rate us if you liked us. 5 stars, please, if you liked us. And please follow on social media. Twitter is Weed Wine and True Crime. And you can also find us at R0SE420. So Rose with a 0 instead of an O, 420. And you can find us on Instagram at Weed Wine and True. I hope everybody has a great day, and I hope you guys tune in for the next episode, my little rosebuds. Love you guys. Thanks as always for the support. Recommend us to a friend, and I will see you next time.